Your jacket is now dry.
Hello, and welcome to What's the Deal? A show dissecting every episode of Seinfeld in chronological order. With me today, as always, is Christopher Young.
Howdy.
Patrick Armstrong.
Hello.
And me, Cameron Wong. This is episode 4, and today we will be looking at season 1, episode 4 of Seinfeld, Male Unbonding. And a simple premise this week. In this week's episode, Jerry wants to break up with an old friend, but feels that he can't break up with another man. And that's it. That's the whole premise.
That is.
It's a premise for excitement. And a popular 90s sitcom.
Well, it wasn't popular at this point, but it became popular.
That's a very valid point.
And also, I think at this point, it's the 80s. Isn't it still the 80s? Isn't it 89?
Yeah, I think 89.
Just ruined everything you said.
Well, I mean, it's 90s in spirit.
Are we sure?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Either way, Christopher, how are you today?
Oh, I'm pretty good, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. It's a nice day today. I don't know, I had a Yorkshire pudding for dinner.
Is that like one of those puddings that are like savory, like with meat?
Yeah. Yes.
That's a British pudding.
I've never had one of those.
Oh, really? They're good.
They're
you
good.
You don't have to have them with meat. They're like just wheat and egg and water, salt. Good.
That sounds all right.
Yeah, eat one.
Yeah, okay.
They're delicious. And for the record, it is 1990.
Oh, wow.
I looked it up. 1990. June, I believe.
But didn't it start in 89?
It did. The first episode aired in 89, and the rest of them were in the 90s.
That was a mid-season pickup.
Yeah. And of course, Patrick, how are you today?
Oh, I'm good. Doing great.
Any exciting news?
No exciting news.
Ask me if I have exciting news.
Cameron, hey, do Cameron. You have exciting news?
Oh, I do, as a matter of fact. Thank you for asking. I used hover.com to register our domain name.
So what is that domain name?
Well,
was that easy or not easy, Cameron?
That was very easy. There was no problem. Seamless process. Listen to last week's episode and find out all about the great deals.
Was it better than using one of those other domain registries? You know the ones I'm talking about.
I'm not going to name them, but they are.
No.
It was better than that.
They're terrible.
Hey, Patrick, ask me again what the domain name is for our show.
Hey, Cameron, what's the domain name for the show?
That's a great question. It's whatsthedealshow.com. Go there. Tell your friends to go there.
You can also find us on iTunes, probably, by this point, that you're listening to the show.
There's a chance.
Search for What's the Deal Show.
On iTunes.
Or search for Seinfeld.
No.
On iTunes.
No, don't do that.
Otherwise, I mean, if you want to watch Seinfeld.
Oh, yeah, that would be appropriate.
Yeah. It'd be very appropriate, especially if you wanted to watch along with the podcasts.
That's a good point. We don't get any money from that. No royalties whatsoever.
Mm-mm.
You can send us money, though. There's PayPal on the website.
Yeah. What's the deal show at PayPal? So
we're going to have t-shirts with Shopify, our next unsponsor.
Great show today. We've got a great show today. This is a strong start, a solid start to a great episode. Let's dive right in, I say.
Yeah. Call it a great episode. It was a good episode.
So the monologue. First thing I noticed, Jerry had an acceptable jacket and an acceptable tie.
I like this tie. Yeah. It looked kind of like jumping jacks, is what I thought. Not like the person, like just jacks, I guess, not jumping jacks. Like the children's toy.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, it wasn't a tie I would wear, but it wasn't a tie that I would notice somewhere and be like point out to someone. It was just a tie. He had a brown jacket. That was also fine.
You wouldn't stop him on the street and just berate him because of his tie, like the amoeba tie from last week?
I mean, I wouldn't do that no matter what, but that was
I would stop tie. Jerry Seinfeld on the street, but mostly to say hi.
And then berate him for his tie?
I wouldn't even do that. I'd be like, hey, good job with everything.
That tie you wore 22 years ago really made me upset.
I wouldn't even mention that. I wouldn't do it.
The boiled egg tie, no good either. But yeah, the monologue was okay. It was kind of like more like men are like this, women are like this humor, except yes. This one was just about men in the construction site.
I had a hard time. Like, I realized that, you know, in real life, Jerry Seinfeld did grow up in a sort of suburban neighborhood, and yet I have a hard time seeing Jerry anywhere near these sort of people he's talking about, these suburban dads that want to go take a look at each other's engines. Like, Jerry, to me, just perpetually lives in New York apartments.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the point of the monologue was that that none of these guys who are watching people do things really knew what they were doing. Like, it was just, like, they wanted to be associated with it, right? So I can kind of understand that. Like, Jerry doesn't know what he's doing because he grew up in somewhere and then wanted to be associated with men working.
So you're saying it's a bunch of New York liberals making fun of real America.
I could kind of appreciate that, because honestly, when I see other people doing some sort of manual labor, something with tools, something like that, like, I can't build anything. You guys know me. You know, putting the nail on the wall is about the full extent of it, and even that could be a struggle. Because let me tell you, sometimes that nail goes in too far. Can't pull it back out once it's flush against the wall.
Sometimes it's hard to hit the nail, too.
It is. It's a small target.
It's a small little thing.
I'm not Luke Skywalker here. This isn't an exhaust port, you know? It's just... But I'd love to own a bunch of power tools. I like the idea of owning all those things. So when other people are using them, I kind of like it. And I hear, like, a loud tool, and I get kind of angry, and I look out, you know, the window, and I want to see who's making that noise. But at the same time, I'm looking, I was like, oh, what's that? Bandsaw? Could use one of those. I don't know what I would do with it, but there's some sort of appeal to the tool, even though I can't do anything with it. So I was kind of on board with the monologue.
I like building things, and even though the things that I build typically aren't very good, I do like going to Home Depot to buy the things that I need for it. I'll walk up and down, like, Home Depot for hours and hours and hours and just, like, marvel at all the things that I could buy to build things that I can't actually build. But it's a mid-90s, very male thing, but it's still true in 2012.
Was, like, Jerry Seinfeld the pioneer of observational humor like this, or...
I think he was the first success story of observational humor. I couldn't say for sure that he was the first. Although, I noticed that, although I guess I was receptive to the joke, did you guys notice that it seemed like the in-studio audience was a little bit muted on that monologue? Because the laughter was pretty dead.
Is that even a real... studio audience? I always assumed that, like, all the footage of the laughter was just, like, they had all this footage in a comedy club.
There are actually people. There's a later episode where you see Jerry interacting with somebody in the audience and whatever, so they actually have people there. I'm not convinced that they're not necessarily actors, but I do like how it's, like, a fake comedy club, and there's a guy holding, like, a mug of beer and whatever.
There's actually this one shot in particular where this woman is laughing and her mouth is open so wide, it's horrifying to me. Like, I paused the screen, or, like, I paused it and rewound because, like, her laughter was so unsettling to me. I don't know how they included that shot. It was very distracting.
I imagine that, I think it has to be, like a sort of set, because there's all those later episodes in the Comedy Club where, like, the heckling episode... And there's actual things that take place within the plot in that comedy club. So, I mean, maybe not at this point, but at some point they do build a very, I think, minimal set just to put people in and put around some tables with a... It probably was not a very, like, high-value set, but I don't think, like, it's just footage they shot before. Mm-hmm. I think it's part of the production schedule.
So, speaking of comedy... Let me tell you, George wearing that fanny pack in the very first scene, I saw it right away, and I'm glad that eventually Jerry did acknowledge that he was wearing a fanny pack, but I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe seeing that man wearing that fanny pack, it was, I don't know, there's something about the fanny pack I can't even put into words about how sort of shocking it is to see someone wearing the fanny pack. Unless you're a dad, the fanny pack can't go around your waist.
Yeah, it was incredible. Honestly, like, I didn't know what to write about the fanny pack. I just couldn't stop looking at it. So in my notes, I just wrote, George has a fanny pack. Like, I thought that was enough.
Mine just says George is wearing a fanny pack.
Yeah, it was incredible. I couldn't stop looking at that fanny pack.
Now, did either of you ever have a fanny pack?
I think I got one at Disneyland in, like, 1997 or something. It had Goofy on the top. I used it to put some toys in or something.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I owned a black fanny pack that I stored my Game Boy and, like, my choicest games in.
Oh, nice.
However,
nice.
I never like, actually wore the fanny pack. Like, I would carry it, like, I would hold on to the strap and carry it.
Is that
I guess
better?
Like a purse. I don't know that
say,
it's
it doesn't
better,
seem much better.
But honestly, like, even as a child, I couldn't bear to wear a fanny pack. It was too much. Like, I'd rather carry it like a purse than wear it as a fanny pack.
Tristan and I had matching fanny packs. I do remember this. And they were like bright fluorescent pink and sort of a lime color. And I don't mean that they were both pink and lime. I mean, one was pink and one was lime. Yeah, it was the style of the time.
What did you have in there? What, like, that's the thing. Kids had them, obviously. When we were kids, growing up in the 90s, kids had those fanny packs, but what did you even own that you were putting out? Like, Patrick had his Game Boy in there. I don't know what I had in
there. Yeah, mind. Like, do you have your wallet? Like, kids don't need money.
I think I had some rocks in one of mine. Just, like, rocks. Like, a cool rock that I found, you know? I was like, oh, this is kind of shiny. Throw that
you
in there.
You have a rock collection?
Well, I had a rock in my fanny pack, but...
Like, I don't understand... Like, obviously parents are buying these for their kids. What were they thinking that the kids really needed to carry around with them? Like, was your mom like, Cameron's always carrying those rocks in his hand, so it would be real handy if he had a fanny pack to set them
Maybe
in.
It was going to be, like, a very light year at school, and, like, if you just wanted to have just your pencils and, like, a small notebook, like a reporter... Like a very stylish reporter. You could carry everything that you needed to be a mid-90s sort of like investigative journalist in that fanny pack.
And so what I don't understand, though, is George has got that fanny pack. So in what world did he have floss in his pocket? Why did he have floss in his pocket? He's talking about how, you know, I can't remember what his girlfriend's name is, was turned off that when he pulled his hand out of his pocket, he had floss in there.
That's why he bought the fanny pack.
Yeah, that's what spurred it on. But why would you have a single line of floss in your pocket? Like, not even just the little container.
For later.
I don't know. I didn't understand that at all. Like, honestly, I was watching that scene he was describing, and I could not relate. Like, floss stays in the bathroom. You floss your teeth, you get out of there.
I mean, but if he has just, like, the little package, put that in the fanny pack. Or put that in your pocket. But why a line of floss?
Yeah. Well, see, I assumed it was... used floss and had been like improperly discarded, like it kind of, you know, like how, I don't know, this has never actually happened to me either, but when they make jokes about toilet paper accidentally, you know, sticking out and sticking to you or something, I don't know, I assumed it was some sort of floss that he had meant to discard but somehow managed to like float its way into his pocket and he didn't realize it.
Yeah, I don't know, it was definitely strange. As strange as the fanny pack itself. Did you guys notice the elevator that they were going up in? Like, it was like a like wooden elevator that was like really like nicely made, but it had like lots of scratches on it. I was really impressed with the like set decorator for the scene, like that they bothered to scratch up the elevator, that they thought like the elevator should be kind of fancy but scratched up. Like, Jerry lives in a lived-in apartment.
See, I was just impressed by how much of his hallway we saw. This is like the most of Jerry's hallway we've ever seen, it seems.
Yeah, actually, I wrote that it was a really elaborate shot when they walked from the elevator all the way to his apartment. Because they, like, did, like, a... What's that kind of camera? A Steadicam? Like, they did, like, a Steadicam shot from the elevator all the way to his apartment door.
Yeah,
I was really
and they
impressed.
Had, like, the bend around the corner
yeah,
and stuff
they showed
like
the
that.
Window actually... in his apartment. I'd never seen a window in that hallway before. It was incredible.
Actually, I made a note about this. They kind of fake it. The set, I think, is like a box, and like if you watch it again, it seems like the camera is just pivoting on axis around a circular sort of set. And by that logic, they come out of the elevator actually where Kramer's door is, and they could have just walked a third, but they kind of walk around this thing in a way that fakes going down a hallway. It's a pretty impressive little trick.
Well, it fooled me. I was really impressed by that shot.
I don't think they ever used anything like that again, did they?
No, I don't think so. It actually reminded me of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Like, Curb Your Enthusiasm does those kind of shots, but I've never seen something like that in Seinfeld.
You do see some more hallways in later episodes. You do see a little bit of the walk to Newman's, but there's never that sort of, like, long shot where the camera follows them. And I mean, I guess the shot isn't that long, but you know, the camera follow them that much. There's not even like normally that much camera movement on Seinfeld, right? You know, it's a 90s sitcom that you just point and shoot, right?
Yeah, maybe just the scenes where they're like walking down the street, they show like walking to the New York Health Club or something.
So when they get into the apartment, I know we talked about it last week, but man, Kramer is so crazy. In this first season, he's on the phone. He's like, there's a cure for cancer or whatever. And he's like going off. It's so weird. He's so strange. He's still really funny. And, you know, he's got that stuff. He's talking about making your own pizza pie, another later episode of Seinfeld.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
just the way he acts is just so crazy. He's just barely a human.
Yeah, I really honestly in these early episodes, I have no idea why Jerry is letting him into his apartment. It's so strange. Like, Jerry and George and Elaine, they can't relate to Kramer either. Like, so often Kramer will say something and they'll just stare at him for a second and be like, no, I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, I don't understand it at all. But at the same time, in this scene, Kramer is wearing really normal clothes.
He's
wearing just like a normal sweater and pants. He actually looks kind of nice. He's one of the better dressed characters in this episode.
Well, next to the fanny pack, yeah, he doesn't stick out. And even his hair doesn't seem that crazy. It just seems big and kind of hipstery.
Yeah. I did really appreciate that this was the first reference to Kramerica Industries. I really like that.
Oh, yeah. I guess when he gets his intern later.
Yeah, and like I liked that he had been talking on Jerry's phone and then later like picked out his portable phone out of his pocket and like pulled out the antenna. I thought that was actually like really like a really funny part of the episode. I was really appreciative of that.
I noticed he's got I guess it's because it was filmed before. But he seemed to get all, not only did he restock his apartment after the robbery, but he seems to have been able to restock it with exactly the same things he had before the robbery.
Speaking of things in his apartment and like the set dressing and scent in general, did you notice the enormous cactus in Jerry's apartment?
Yeah,
like
yes.
Kind of
yes.
Like, what is that doing there? Why does he own that?
Why does he own that half a human head with the brain exposed as a decoration? And the thing about that half a human head with the brain exposed, which already doesn't make any sense, is the fact that it just has its own little shelf, like its own little thing. And it only would fit that. I guess you could put a potted plant on it, but he's already got a cactus the size of Texas.
I don't understand it at all. Like, it's like he has... If he were... studying to be a doctor, it would make sense. You know, he has to remind himself of what a brain looks like. Like, where's the cerebral cortex? Where's the spinal cord? Blah, blah, blah.
See, to me, it looks like something out of one of the openings for, like, Monty Python. Like, those animated openings where things just pull apart and there's weird things that dance out of, like, the head and the brain. It looks like it could be stop-motion animated or be in a science lab.
It's strange. It's really weird.
Strange.
At first, I was just trying to pass it off as, decor of the 90s. But you know what? We grew up in the 90s, and I was never at anybody's house where there was a half a head with the brain.
Yeah, do you think the set decorators were just trying to, like, really trying hard to make Jerry, like, a cool bachelor? Like, he has that poster of a Porsche in the background.
Well, Jerry Seinfeld, like, he loves Porsches, though. I assume that was like, because there was that, there was the refer, there was the model Porsche in the breakup, or not the breakup episode, the robbery episode. I think the Porsche is more like the Superman references. Yeah.
I don't know. It was weird. What do you guys think of Kramer's business plan to have them make your own pizza pie? Do you think that's a bad idea?
You know what? I think it sounds like fun. I think like making your own pizza sounds like fun, but I don't think that there's really a business for that. You know, if you had kids, I bet the kids would like that. Put your own topping on there. But George raised a very good point that you can't have a business where you shove things into a 600 degree oven.
See, but I don't think you would be like the person would put the pizza in themselves. I think they dress the pizza. Give it to some employee, they would put it in the pizza oven.
See, I agree with that, but the problem with this business model is that inevitably, if you've done a poor job somewhere along the way, while you had fun, the food won't be good, so you'll only do it once.
Yeah, there's that, and I just couldn't help but thinking, like, in those pizza places, they have all of the ingredients in, like, big tubs, right? So people would be, like, reaching in. I feel like it would be, like, a huge problem for disease and just very unsanitary. It's like Kramer's the one running it, so it already doesn't sound like it'd be very sanitary. I feel like it's the kind of thing that sounds fun to do at your friend's house, but not as a business.
But you know, I think with that kind of thing, the prep is really the awful part. So maybe they could just like have it in like little plastic bags, and then you'd pull out an individual portion of cheese and put that on your pizza, or an individual portion of pepperoni or pineapple.
Yeah, it just seems like a lot of work. And
yeah.
I don't know.
Did you also notice that, again, George gives advice to Jerry about... Okay, so wait. So the whole premise of this episode is this character, Joel, is Jerry's friend, but Jerry can't stand this guy. And
yeah.
He wants to like get out of being friends with him. And so he explains this to George, and then George does this thing again, which is probably unique to the first season, where George gives Jerry a bunch of advice, and then Jerry takes that advice.
Yeah.
Which is very disorienting. Like, I don't know why Jerry trusts George so much.
Well, we also don't know why he spends time with Kramer, so maybe just Jerry doesn't make any sense in the first season.
Yeah, it's almost like Jerry is a person who is just, like, surrounded by insanity and doesn't realize it.
Yeah. I have a question. So, given the theme of this episode, have either of you had to do this? Have you ever had to break up with a friend, like a guy friend, or even, like, a platonic female friend, just because... maybe like you grew apart and didn't have as much in common, or maybe it's like this and you decided you just couldn't stand the person anymore. Like, have you ever had to really do this?
I've been in the situation where I've had a friend that I didn't want to spend time with, but my solution is always alienating them by always avoiding plans, which isn't a good solution. And I feel guilty about it every time, but
it works.
Honestly, the idea of like, breaking up with a platonic friend seems so awful that I would rather just like be like, oh, let's hang out sometime. Yeah, we haven't seen each other in a while. Yep, see you later. And like not make specific plans. I prefer that to like saying that I don't want to talk to them anymore.
I feel like it's easy in that regard because it just kind of works itself out because you just don't hang out and it just stops happening. You know, Joel is very persistent.
Yeah.
But I feel like in real life, that's not really the issue. On the other hand, I think that we often have friends who, if we hadn't been friends with for so long, I'm not sure that everyone would necessarily, like, or that would still be someone's friend, like, later on in life. So someone who maybe had a lot of stuff in...
you just liked my ping pong table, didn't you?
You didn't have a ping pong
it
table.
It comes out.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I feel like when I go home to my hometown where I grew up, I am dreading, like, accidentally running into someone I know who still lives there. And if
yeah.
I ever do, I always pretend like, oh, you still live here? I had no idea. I would have definitely called you to hang out. But most of the time, I'm hoping I never run into anyone I know.
Okay, so I had a friend who really did have to do this, and he did it in the most breakup-y way possible. He took him to Burger King and said, listen, I'm sorry, but I just don't have time in my life for you right now. I don't feel like we're really compatible friends. And the guy got like really mad and stormed out of there. And I just don't think I could ever do that. I was really impressed with my friend for having so straightforwardly broken up with a friend like that.
Yeah,
because I would just do the blow off.
It's funny because, like, so in this next scene, you see Jerry is hanging out with Joel, and Joel is a huge turd. He is
the
worst.
Yeah, he's awful.
Like,
he's really
mean,
awful.
He's mean to the server, and like he talks about some old friend of theirs, and the only point is that he has big ears and that he saw him. And then Jerry eventually decides this is enough. He has to break up with him.
Yeah.
And as he's breaking up with him, this guy Joel starts crying. And as this happens, eventually Jerry gives, and he's like, no, 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 I've just, you know, I'm really stressed, blah, blah, blah. We shouldn't have broken up. And as I'm watching this, I'm thinking, Jerry, you're being, you're messing this up. You should have just broken up with him. You should have toughed it out.
Yeah.
But like,
he was so close.
He was
so close.
He was
out.
But
he was out.
But honestly, in that situation where someone is crying because of what you're saying, and you can make it better for them, and Jerry is such like a people pleaser. He wants everyone to like him. Like, he just wants to be, you know, like Jerry Seinfeld. He likes cereal. Everyone likes him. So when this guy is crying because he wants to break up with him, like, that is the most difficult thing to Jerry Seinfeld. So I totally understand it. But I don't know, like, that situation stuff. I've never been in that situation.
Well, I gotta say, insofar as Joel goes, yeah, he's awful. But I kind of liked him on the show because he was such a jerk. I like that part where he's crying and he turns to the bar and he's like, and I always tell everybody, go see his show. And he just like he just shouts it out, and you just see all like the little reaction head turns. He was actually not that bad. I mean, he is a bad person, but as far as characters go, because I know last week when we were talking about this episode briefly, I was pretty negative about it, but I ended up enjoying this episode more than I thought I would, and I think part of the reason is because I found Joel more entertaining than I remembered him being. I just remembered him being a turd and thinking, wow, I wouldn't want to be in that situation.
Well, see, I mean, I thought, obviously, all the stuff in the coffee shop is pretty horrible. He's clearly a very bad person. I really did like that Hezbollah joke that Jerry does, though.
Yeah, I thought that was a great joke.
Seriously, I'm learning
still
Farsi.
Still good today.
Yeah. To me, Joel really becomes just clearly impossibly bad in the later scene with Elaine. But I guess we can talk about that later.
That was horrible. So they finish up. Jerry gives away the tickets to the game.
He doesn't
send
that at all.
I couldn't believe that he gave away the tickets that he promised to a friend that he likes to placate this guy Joel.
Yeah.
I don't understand Jerry at all in this season. Like, he's given away his new apartment. He doesn't care that his place has been robbed. He's given away tickets to people he doesn't. Jerry is too nice. Too nice.
It is funny because he's very empathetic in this season, and yet one of the big things in, I don't know what season it is, maybe it's like season 6 or 7, where there's an episode where Jerry gets emotions. Do you guys remember this episode?
yeah.
And it's like he already had them, and he loses them somewhere around in between season 1 and season 2, I guess, because it is so weird. He cares so much early on, and his whole character later on is like, it'll work out or whatever. He just doesn't care.
Maybe it's because they thought they had to structure, you know, a series around a somewhat likable leading man. And then when they realized they had no ratings, they're just like, why not? Just do the show they want to do.
Yeah.
So in this next scene, when they're in the bank, there's two things that I noticed right away. One is that George is wearing that weird sweater that he was wearing in the last episode again.
Like he's covered in whipped cream.
Yeah, the whipped cream one. But I also noticed that in the background of this fake bank, there's just a giant banner that says, "Loans as big as Manhattan." Who is the clientele at this bank? Who needs a loan that big?
Yeah, I don't know.
High-rolling comedians.
I thought maybe that joke was just, it's expensive to live in Manhattan. You can get a loan to live here. Was that the joke?
Oh, it could be. I certainly did not interpret it that way.
Like,
but...
yeah. Like, I was trying to understand it as a thing that would actually occur in a real bank in New York in 1990. But I have to say, in this scene, when George was sadly hugging his jar of pennies...
That's what I was going to say, yeah.
Like, honestly, that was... I think he was sad because his, like, this floss thing that you were talking about earlier, Chris. But, like, him hugging those pennies was, like, the George that you would see in season five or season six of Seinfeld. Like, it's so great because he's so sad and hugging this thing of pennies. And then George is so outraged when they won't take his completely unreasonable request to count all his pennies.
I liked how mad he was. It was very, it was that George of later seasons.
Yeah, it was great.
It's indignantly pathetic. It's the best kind of George.
Yeah.
And that my money's tied up in change. That was a great line.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah. There was another great joke in that scene about how George says that he knew somebody that took a vacation on his change. And Jerry asked him if the guy went to an arcade.
Yeah, I wrote that joke down specifically because I thought it was really funny.
It was great. It felt very in the moment. It didn't feel very rehearsed.
Yeah, I thought it was the best joke of the episode. I really liked that joke.
Well, see, this is like another example of how they don't quite clearly have their characters down, because this seems like something so obviously like a Kramer type thing. And then I just think about the Paisanos later, where he just got like bags of change. Like that, this just seems like a total Kramer bit. And to put George as this sad sack, who we've like established for the last few episodes as this successful realtor, to be pathetically hugging this massive jar of change. It's funny, but it makes no sense with the rest of the series.
In this season, George bringing in a huge jar of pennies is completely out of character for how he is in the rest of the season.
Yeah.
It's very strange. Like, otherwise he's really successful. He's showing his apartments in Manhattan.
Yeah, he's confident. He's giving advice. It's good.
Yeah, he's bringing in this big jar of change, and then in the next season, he's rolling all these pennies. That is totally out of character for the rest of the season, George.
But it does kind of work at setting up future George, in as much as I do think it demonstrates how cheap he is. It does kind of set up that thing where he's like, he can't even let go of a cent.
Yeah.
Which does work. And I mean, you know, I guess money is money. As he says, like, what am I supposed to do with this? Throw it out the window or whatever.
You'd kill a person. that could have been a bet.
It's just like the way that he's hugging that money, and the way that he's just like so incensed that people won't do the work for him to have this money, but he wants the value from it. It does kind of work, but you do raise a really good point about how it is something that we'd almost expect to see Kramer doing, except I'd expect to see Kramer with like all the pennies with his like shirt pulled out in front of him and like the pennies in there waddling into the bank with it or something.
And then he would just dump the pennies onto the counter and be really upset when they wouldn't count.
Well, what does he do in the Paisanos episode?
He fills his pockets full of them. And he's just like walking down the street and he's just like jangling all over the place. There's pennies flying.
But doesn't he bring in like a giant water cooler jug full of them or something?
Was that to buy calzone or something?
It was to buy calzones.
Calzones. That's what I mean. Yeah.
He just dumps it on the counter.
Yeah, because he had all that extra change because he was drying his clothes because he liked wearing clothes fresh out of the dryer.
Right.
And then they cook the clothes.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So back at the apartment, like, they go back to the apartment and then Jerry and just George are discussing maybe like having an excuse to get out of Jerry going to this game with Joel. And George really wants Jerry to say that he's like lost the tickets or something, and Jerry just wants to give the tickets to Joel and get out of it. So I think the excuse Rolodex that they talk about in this episode is a really funny idea. I really like that idea. Honestly, when he was talking about it, I was thinking that I needed to build my own excuse Rolodex.
You wouldn't have had to do the show.
Yeah, it's been great.
The thing that I really noticed at the apartment at this point was last week I was talking about how in production, this was the first episode that Elaine was in. And it was at this point that I realized, you know, we're like 18 minutes into this episode or something like that. She hasn't shown up. She's not even in this episode yet. And it's not until, I guess, the next scene where she's there and the show's over. Like, she's barely in this episode at all. It is actually, or it was, a very good idea move this episode because
I agree.
Elaine is just, like, this woman that's in Jerry's apartment. We have no idea who she is. She's not introduced as anyone in particular. They do have Joel say, like, oh, I thought you guys broke up. And I guess that was supposed to be the setup, but she was not featured at all. And I actually had read earlier today that she was, when they wrote this script, they hadn't kind of had the edict come down from the network yet that they needed an actual female character. So she wasn't in this episode, and they wrote her into that last scene in the script.
Like, she was just going to be maybe like one episode character or something?
She just wasn't in this. They thought that female character who worked in that coffee shop in the first episode was going to be good enough to count as, I guess, having a woman in the show.
Oh, man.
And so they
waitress from the last episode?
No, in the very first episode, the waitress who has the two coffees, you know, she's like, I have a very hard job, George.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And so I guess it wasn't until later in this production schedule that they just like popped Elaine into this episode.
Yeah, it was really strange that this was the first appearance of Elaine that they thought would happen. Like, if I were watching the show, I would figure that I had missed something and that they'd previously explained who she was. Because just saying that I thought you guys broke up, that's not enough of an introduction for a new character who's going to be in all the other episodes in the season. But speaking of which, Joel was incredibly creepy in this scene.
So, like, creepy.
I was really unsettled, like, when he was like, who's this lady who's here with you, Jerry?
This is Elaine.
Ooh. Yeah, this is awful. You guys broke up? Ooh. Let's go to a Knicks game together. Oh my god.
Yeah, he was just a horrible, greasy man.
Yeah, it was disgusting.
It did feel very unfortunate. And I have to say, though, my memory of this episode was completely wrong because I actually thought that Elaine ended up going out with him at the end of the episode, which was obviously misremembering the scene. Because honestly, when he started talking to her and it just felt so gross and creepy, in the back of my head, I was thinking, like, wow, I can't believe she ends up going on a date with this guy. He's just so gross.
Wait. I feel like you're honest. Like, isn't there something, like, a later episode that there is something like that?
I think there must be a later episode where she goes out with one of Jerry's friends.
Yeah. Like,
he's the worst, though. Why would anyone go out with this guy? Honestly, Jerry should have broken up with him.
Why does Jerry go out with him?
Yeah, it's a mistake. But I have to say, Elaine's lies in this scene later are incredible. Like,
they're pretty good.
Yeah, she's such a bad liar. Like, I feel like I'm a really bad liar. Every time I lie, I get into trouble because as the lie comes out of my mouth, everyone in the room realizes that I'm lying. Like, there's no point in me ever trying to lie because immediately as it comes out of my mouth, it's a disaster. Elaine's lies are worse. Oh man, it's incredible.
It's like those TV lies where they have to make it very obvious to the studio audience they're lying, but the person right in front of them can't clue into that.
Yeah, like, it's like, next Tuesday we have to go to the organ donor clinic and, like, check if we can donate our organs.
Yeah, and we've got choir practice.
Yeah. Like, but Joel totally buys it. Like, is he just dumb, or do you think it's that they just want to be able to tell these lies on the show?
Did they mention what his job is?
No, but he seems like a stockbroker or something like that.
Something like that, yeah. And then just the part he's got the newspaper rolled up to the sports section just in his jacket. Whoa, what about this date? What about this date? Gotta see Michael Jordan.
You guys would say he called him Air Jordan. I like right. that.
Yeah.
You know, I find it odd that every week we find ourselves talking about Seinfeld fashion, and yet no one's talked about Elaine's clothing in this episode, because that bright yellow banana blazer and her hair, it's just, she looks like straight
April
out of like
O'Neil from Ninja Turtles.
Kind of, she looks like they ripped her out of like 1981 or something like that and brought her forward to this episode. She is, you know, maybe it was time appropriate, but that outfit in particular just seems so bizarre to me.
Not quite sure why Joel's so enchanted.
You know, it's funny that you say that, because honestly, when I saw this scene, I really liked Elaine's outfit. I thought she looked really attractive. I liked her yellow blazer. I liked her hair. I was like, Elaine's a really attractive lady. You know, no wonder they cast her. I like her haircut. I think she looks good.
I don't think that she looks bad. It's the clothing in this scene just doesn't, I don't know, it just doesn't seem right to me.
I think she looks good.
Well, yeah,
keep it
fine.
Up, Elaine Bennis. So the only other thing I want to say is Jerry closes out this monologue, and I don't remember what his joke was, but he like mugs for the camera at the end, and they like freeze frame it, and he's like, yeah, he's there with like mugging for the camera with his mouth open. I thought that was the worst, most horrifying scene of the whole show. I hate when people mug for the camera, and a freeze frame of that. I feel like there was just some NBC executive who was like, if we want the show to be popular, you gotta mug for the camera, and we're gonna freeze frame it, and this is gonna be the end of the show. We're gonna have a good memory at the end of the show. I hated it so much. I honestly was ready to dismiss the rest of the episode because of this last shot.
Wow, that's tough.
I was going to say, that's quite serious.
That was no
harsh.
You know, I didn't mind his little bit at the end there. It was, I liked the little line about pretend that you're having your own little talk show.
Yeah, that was okay. But yeah, he said some line about like, oh, that's very interesting, but we're out of time. And then he mugs for the camera.
That was the end of the talk show joke.
Yeah, it was the worst. I hated it.
Well, then let me ask you this. We've reached the end of this episode. How did you feel about this episode versus the other ones in this season? About on par, or?
I didn't think it was as good as the last episode. Like, I didn't sit and, like, genuinely, like, get absorbed in the episode and laugh as much as the previous episode. But it was pretty good. I didn't think it was as bad as you guys thought at the end of the last episode of our show.
I thought it was better than, what was the, like, the one where he's trying to pick up that girl and flirt in front of Elaine. Which one was that?
The stakeout.
The stakeout, yeah. It was better than the stakeout, for sure. But it wasn't as good as the rock.
The stakeout was a pretty boring episode.
Yeah. And I don't know if we can really compare it to the pilot, because the pilot just seems so odd and foreign now. Because even, like, despite the character differences, I feel like they're definitely already getting into the kind of groove and pace of regular Seinfeld episodes by this point.
Yeah, like I said about the last episode, like, Jerry's apartment, I felt comfortable in it. I felt like it was actually his apartment. Yeah. But in that first episode, it was Bizarre World Seinfeld.
But as far as groove and pace go, I mean, this was the very first episode they filmed after the pilot, so
that's
weird. Think that does say something about how they managed to kind of get a good sort of thing going, possibly on the set. You know, they had a regular director in place and stuff like that, and I think it definitely made a difference, because you can, if you held this episode up right next to the pilot, it's like night and day.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's much better than the pilot. It was pretty good.
An interesting little factoid about this episode was that apparently they weren't really sure that they were going to go ahead with this show at this point after the pilot. And apparently they had already actually tried to pass the show onto Fox, but Fox was not interested in it. And they actually ended up getting the money for it because I can't remember his name, but some sort of some producer canceled a Bob Hope special, and that the money savings from that Bob Hope special was enough to produce these four additional episodes for this season.
Oh,
so Bob Hope. I mean,
Bob Hope's a, you know, he's a lot of money goes into Bob Hope.
What USO
was,
tour.
Yeah, what was going on in those Bob Hope specials that the money from one Bob Hope special was enough for five or four episodes of Seinfeld?
Yeah, I feel like that's
Bob
just
itself
like
salt is not cheap.
Yeah. Like, because I feel like a Bob Hope special is just like three cameras in some theater somewhere.
Oh, see, I thought it was like kind of like a something more than just the stand-up kind of comedy special you're talking. When you said Bob Hope special, I was thinking like Star Wars Christmas special, but with Bob Hope. So there would be like a musical number and guest stars that came on.
So Bob Hope on Dagobah.
That's right. Bob Hope in the first appearance of Boba Fett.
But yeah, I thought overall it was a reasonable episode, especially because it was out of order. As the first episode after the pilot, pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty good.
So, of course, this would be the first episode that had the actual music and whatever going on there. There was an alternative ending to the episode where Joel borrows, of all things, a Katie Lang tape from Jerry, and somehow through that Jerry then finally manages to break up with Joel. And just in case anybody's wondering, yes, I am basically quoting verbatim from the Wikipedia entry here. And at the end, then Joel leaves and then comes back again to tell Jerry that he will bring the tape back.
Oh, that's the George move, though.
Yeah.
Stanza.
Yeah. I feel like, because Joel never reappears, right?
Yeah, that's it. Joel is done.
I feel like George is kind of, Joel just be kind of being this one episode character is better than having some kind of wrap up, like a return the tape or something. Like, that's ridiculous.
It'll just be a threat looming over us as we go through these episodes. We got to watch Joel one more time.
Well, in this alternate ending, was this the alternate ending before they decided to write in Elaine?
No, so Elaine was there, and Jerry's like, you know, Joel, it's over, and then Joel leaves, and then he just pops back. He's like, I'll make sure to bring back your tape, and that's, you know, that's the freeze frame ending. Mm-hmm. Oh, damn, Joel will be back.
Ba 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 ba.
All right, so is that it? You got anything else for this episode?
Oh, I think we had some other business.
Well, that's what I'm seeing. I want to know if there's anything else for...
Oh, for this episode of Seinfeld?
Yeah.
For not this episode of What's the Deal?
No, what's the deal will go on. I think we're looking at a record-breaking episode today. This could be our longest episode ever.
Ooh-ah.
I mean, people stopped listening like half an hour ago, but... Or they just never started.
Nah, camera.
Anything else to say about male unbonding?
No, I think we're done.
Yeah, I don't think so.
All right, well,
goodbye, Joel. Good riddance.
In that case, let's move on to other business. And in other business today, Christopher, you have the lead.
Yeah,
what do you
have
for us? Tell us about it.
I saw this article a little while ago, and I thought it was pretty amazing. I'll tell you the headline: Wild Animals Help Kangaroos Break Out of Zoo Underneath Four-Legged Solidarity. And then there's this is on Der Spiegel online. I don't know what that means, but it was a...
it's like the German New Yorker.
Okay.
Or maybe German The Atlantic.
So here it is. Aided by a fox and a wild boar, three kangaroos got through two fences and hopped to freedom from a wildlife park in Germany. Good one, Patrick. All right. They
traveled. Anyone
15...
could have guessed that Der Spiegel was German.
It might have been Austrian.
But they're covering local news. So they traveled 15 kilometers before police closed in on them. I feel like this is... Like, you know, with people,
Wait, why were the police chasing them?
Because they're a menace. You can't just have kangaroos hopping around Germany.
No, let them get out of there.
But well, I just like the idea that
they're...
They
gotta get back to Australia.
They're in some sort of jail, and, you know, there's a barbed wire fence. Exactly. There's the tower guards. The spotlights are down.
Yeah.
The kangaroos are over the top. Where the kangaroos.
Honestly, I feel like this is the same as Jerry's monologue about the socks escaping. Like, the kangaroos are there. They're escaping. Just like
this,
the socks.
This really happened, though. And my question is, like, with people, you can't just make a movie about someone's story without their rights, but animals don't have those rights. This could so be a movie where these kangaroos can talk and they're animated and it's like the Great Escape and they can even use that music. This is such an exciting story, I think.
I think that movie's already been made. I think it's called Chicken Run.
Yeah. What the hell is Chicken Run?
You haven't seen Chicken Run?
No.
It's Armin
haven't seen Chicken Run, don't read Spiegel magazine. Living in a cave here.
Chicken Run, it's Aardman Animation, so same as Wallace and Gromit.
That's neat, yeah.
And Mel Gibson is a rooster or something, and he helps chickens escape from, I don't know, I guess a farm, so that they won't be killed. It's actually kind of a dark analogy to, like, war camps, but it's a children's movie, and it's kind of fun.
Yeah, I think the movie version of these kangaroos escaping from this German zoo.
They're even German. It could be a World War II movie.
Well, I think it's basically the next Wes Anderson movie. Like, it's a claymation movie, just like the Fantastic
Dogs, yeah.
The big great. I can get behind that. That sounds good.
Yeah, the kangaroos' names were Jack, Mick, and Skippy.
Of course they were.
And so the police caught them, all three of them?
They did, but I feel like the movie should end before they get caught. Like, they're trying to get home to see, I don't know, their family or something. Because they're wild kangaroos from Germany, so they'll be able to do that.
And how far did they get again?
They got, like, 15 kilometers. What boggles me is that it's, like, the fox and the boar, they teamed up because they wanted to get into the zoo. And the whole thing just is amazing to me. Animal teamwork.
These kangaroos, it's an amazing story.
I think so.
Yeah, this could definitely be a Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah. Don't forget the fox and the wild boar, too. This could be the sequel to Fantastic Mr. Fox. It could be George Clooney helping the kangaroos get out.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't there also a boar? Wasn't that Bill Murray?
No, he was a badger.
Yeah.
Is there a boar? I don't know. No, I don't think there was.
It's too big.
Yeah, I guess so. It can't fit a tree.
You were just eating those other animals.
So here's my final item. I saw this today. I want to make sure I get the name right, so I pulled the article up here, and I'll just go through again. Sorry, I closed it. But basically, here it is. There is a Jill Sander, who I guess is a famous...
It's a designer.
Designer, yeah. Is selling a brown paper lunch bag for $290.
Is it a good lunch bag?
I mean, it is, as far as paper bags go, it's pretty handsome looking. It's got two little metal eyelets down on the side there, and it's stitched together. It does look quite handsome, and it's stamped on the front, but it is literally a brown paper bag, like what you would bring your lunch in to work with you.
It's hard to get designer paper bags for less than $300.
It's true. I tried to buy a Ralph Lauren paper bag for my lunch the other day, and it was like $700. Outrageous.
And you know they're just made in China.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Jill Sander, good way to undercut the competition.
I don't know. So what is your opinion on this, that it's outrageous, Cameron?
Well, no. What I the reason why I wanted to bring it up, actually, was because I was thinking, like, yeah, this is crazy, but... So, no, it's not so much that I'm outraged at this. I mean, it is kind of absurd. I'm not sure who would be willing to pay this. But it did make me wonder, what sort of crazy product would I be willing to spend that much money on that somebody else would think is crazy? Because, I mean, I did spend... I don't even remember how much I paid to buy that Virtual Boy. But
oh, that's sweet, though.
That's the thing, because
yeah, it's in 3D.
Yeah, oh,
sure, and in black and red.
That's a yeah, that's all the colors for 3D.
But is there? Do you think there is something that's as mundane as a paper bag that you'd be willing to spend that sort of money on? Because I was actually really tempted to buy, of all things, American Apparel had a jacket that was basically made out of paper for sale for a while, and it was kind of expensive. And I was looking at the notes on it, and people were saying, like,
wait, what? If what? You were tempted to buy a paper jacket?
Well, it wasn't just paper, you know, it wasn't just, like, lined sheets of paper, but it was made from basically like a packing sort of paper, but it all been like worked and pressed so that it was soft like fabric, and it looked really cool. But of course, I mean, I think if you got any moisture on it whatsoever, it was instantly ruined. And I didn't end up buying it, obviously, but I did kind of wonder what it would take to make me buy something like that, because if I had $50 million, I probably wouldn't even bat an eye at potentially buying something as dumb as a $290 brown paper bag.
Yeah, absolutely. If I cared about the designer and the things they made, $290? That's nothing.
Yeah, it's just a drop in my...
I'll buy 10.
See, yeah, but I think...
I want lunch for 10 days? Gotta have that bag.
See, but
I think... caviar in there.
The people that, you know, would necessarily buy a designer, you know... paper bag, they're probably the same people that would scoff at someone like you or I that would spend a lot of money to get like a prop from Star Wars or something.
I wouldn't do that.
Oh, I would.
Yeah, I totally. Like, I mean, if I could get like Luke Skywalker's lightsaber.
That was exactly what I was thinking. That lightsaber. The first thing that popped into my head.
Like, I mean, I would spend a stupid amount of money on that.
Patrick, it's a real working lightsaber.
We
saw it work in the movie. We know it's real.
Yeah, or a hoverboard.
Oh man, those are real any day now.
Those are real. Oh, Marty McFly's hoverboard. I'd spend a lot of money on that. I'd even spend a lot of money on that jacket that Marty McFly has that talks to you and says, "Your jacket is now dry."
Oh man, I would buy that.
So Patrick, there's nothing? I mean, you were willing to buy that brown paper bag.
I would buy that brown paper bag if I cared about that designer. But there's nothing, like, that I would spend that much money on at this point. Like, I don't think there's anything I care about much that I would pay, like, if there was a generic version of that thing that it wouldn't
Well, you've got, in this scenario, you had $50 million. Or if you didn't, I just put that stipulation on it right now.
Yeah, sure, if I had $50 million, I'd pay $300 for a paper bag.
Yeah, but would you... buy Luke's lightsaber?
Sure, why not?
All right, great. So we're all in agreement.
If I were a millionaire, I'd buy any stupid thing.
See, I feel like if I was even just a little bit more well off than I am now, I'd probably be a lot more given how much it goes for. I would do something stupid like, you know, put off rent as long as I could to buy like Luke Skywalker's lightsaber for a reasonable price. And by reasonable, I mean several thousand dollars.
You can put off rent until the first of the month.
Well, no, you keep on, like, lying and things and say, like, oh, checks in the mail or stuff like that. You know, just weave and dodge. It was a holiday kind of thing. If I had to, like, max out my credit card to get Luke Skywalker's lightsaber, I would do something stupid like that. So I can understand why people that like fashion would buy a $300 paper bag. Now, is it only one paper bag or is it, like, a set? Like, because if you go to the grocery store and you buy, like, some paper bags, you get more than one.
No, it's one.
It is definitely just one, yeah.
Yes, you know, actually, I don't think I would want Luke Skywalker's lightsaber for any amount of
time.
Because you know what? I was at the Experience Music Project in Seattle, and they had, like, one of the, like, Cylon Raiders, like, the little, like, spaceships that the Cylons have that always attack Battlestar Galactica for some reason, I guess, to destroy them. Those are the last humans.
Yeah, we know about Battlestar.
It looked like this plastic piece of garbage that, like, I don't understand why anyone would want it. It looked like it was something I made in my garage out of paper mache. And then, like, it was like, this is a Cylon. Look at this Cylon I built. It was garbage. It was I can't believe I watched that show and thought it looked good. It was a piece of trash.
But you know,
I wouldn't want to own it. If someone offered it for me for $100, I wouldn't buy it. It was garbage. Luke Skywalker's lightsaber, I think it would look like a piece of trash if he had it in person. I would rather not own it.
Wow.
Well, that's a good, that's a good a place as any to set it up for next week here.
I mean, I'm going to have to rethink my involvement in this podcast.
So speaking of this podcast, next week we're going to be looking at episode 5 of the first season, The Stock Tip, which is incidentally the season finale of the first season. I think it's actually a pretty good episode. Obviously, I've watched it probably about a million times, but I do think it's pretty funny, so I think we're in for something good next week. Maybe some more animal interest stories, I don't know, in other business.
Fair.
Oh, we'll see what I can find.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe
monkey news.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see how people react to it.
Chimpanzee that.
Yeah, people like animal news. I think it's fun.
Just want to say, if you like our show, rate it on iTunes. Really helpful.
Yeah, give it 1 star.
No,
1 star. Cameron. 5 stars.
Five stars.
Feel like we deserve 3 stars at this point.
Give it as many stars as you think is reasonable.
Yeah.
Plus one.
Maybe write a review.
Wow.
Oh,
yeah.
That would be the best. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. And you know, now that the shows are starting to display out time wise, I'm thinking maybe. Well, just stay tuned. Stay tuned for potential developments on what that might mean.
And potential other non-sponsors to not sponsor us.
There's a chance that they will show up too at some point.
Yeah. There's a lot of people not sponsoring us in the future.
Yeah, you know, like adamandeve.com.
What?
What? Do you guys not know what adamandeve.com is?
I don't know what that is. AdamandEve.com
sponsor like every podcast, and they like sell sex toys and porn.
Not on 5x5. Oh,
not on 5x5, but on like the Marc Maron podcast.
Well, or... that's AdamandEve.biz sponsors 5x5.
Yeah. Oh man.
TV.
Anyway.
So, do you guys have anything else you want to add here?
I am looking at this bag, and it doesn't seem worth it. Seems nice. It looks like the kind of sort of like you know the vacuum, or not vacuum, but the very highly compressed biodegradable packaging in that Apple products come in.
Yes.
This is what this material looks like, this paper bag.
I think it just looks like paper.
I'm not gonna lie, I'm with Patrick on this. It does just look like paper to me. It looks nice.
I mean, a paper bag is a great kind of bag. But I don't think it looks like anything other than that.
Looks more sturdy. I'm looking at the cutaway. It's more box-like.
All right, I think it's time to
run. I'm going to buy it. I'm buying it.
Get All it. Right, tell us about it next week.
We'll review. Cool.
All right, great. Yeah. Well, so thank you again for listening this week. Another great episode, and I think next week possibly an even better episode. Which will be the feather in our podcast cap as we wrap up the first season of Seinfeld. So thank you very much. And once again, from Christopher Young.
See you guys.
Patrick Armstrong.
Till next week.
And myself, Cameron Wong. Thanks for listening. And hopefully you'll be with us again next week. I said that thing again. That sounds like a threat.
I feel threatened.
Well, we'll work on it. It's early season.
First 5 episodes, they didn't need to be good.